Well, hello.
Hi.
This is another episode of Lit Up with Nina Alvarez. I'm your host, Nina Alvarez. And this week we are so lucky to have on Tate DeCaro. Tate is a good friend of mine, and it's kind of hard to introduce your friends with any objectivity. But the reason Tate's on Lit Up at this particular point in time is because she's recently finished training, a very intensive training to become a yoga instructor, and has gotten her first jobs. And so that's sort of the Lit Up part of what's going on. You know, I'm interested in energy healing and holistic well-being and that sort of things. And yoga fits very nicely in there. Mm-hmm. But what makes this to me even more interesting about having Tate on is the journey she's taken to get to this point, especially over the last year, 2014 to 2015, which is an extraordinarily, I think, inspiring journey. And I want to start out by saying that you mentioned once, Tate, that the quote that some years are questions and some years are answers.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of maybe what I'll even title. I'm already titling this episode. Because 2014 was a question, 2015 was an answer, is that it?
I think I actually said that last year, so.
Last year was the answer, because then you started the training.
2013 yes. was definitely a big old question.
Big old questions. Yeah. So I'm going to step back, and if you don't mind, let you introduce yourself. You do a number of things, so
sure.
Just go for it.
Yeah, so I work as a development associate at Writers and Books. I've been doing that since November. Although I've been involved with Writers and Books for a lot of years and have worked sort of on and off here, but I now have a permanent position here. And I also am a yoga instructor. So yes. Those are my two main gigs.
Yeah. You started out somewhat as a writer, right? You went to Bard.
Yeah. I mean, I actually got started writing in second grade. I had a very influential, awesome teacher named Mrs. Shade. She was my second grade teacher, and we read a lot of poetry in her class, and I got really into writing, like, short poems.
And where was this?
This was at World of Inquiry.
Okay.
Yes. On university.
Rochester.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 58 school. And so I kind of was writing ever since then, and was really, you know, got more and more into it in high school, and more just for myself. I didn't share it a whole lot, but I really enjoyed it. And then, yes, I went to Bard College, which is very focused on writing. You basically can't go there if you don't, you know, have somewhat of an interest in writing.
Right.
Or at least at the time. I don't know. It's changed a lot, and they have, like, a medical school now, and it's quite different. But I think they still have that focus. And still, actually, you know, they get a lot of – there's a lot of writers that are on staff, like, permanently, but they also get a lot of guest teachers.
Yeah.
So right now Neil Gaiman is actually teaching there, which I'm super jealous.
I
yeah.
Go back to school
when I heard that, I just couldn't. I was so jealous of everyone who's a student there right now.
100%. I would die for being a positive. That's very cool. So you were thinking about being a writer, or at least you liked writing.
Yeah.
Who knows what they're going to do when they start college?
Right.
And what did you end up majoring
in? I majored in psychology,
which
was also an interest of mine, so it wasn't like, you know, a complete 180. And at Bard, you know, I still was writing a lot, but it kind of morphed into doing a lot more academic writing.
Right.
And I guess I'd say ever since then, it never fully came back the way that it was sort of more of a passion for me in high school. But it's something that every once in a while sort of randomly comes out, and I just will have to write for a while, you know.
Great.
So that's fun. And then I also, you know, I still journal sometimes, especially during, you know, when I'm going through something specific or just trying to make sure that I remember, you know, we'll get to this, but, you know, my Hawaii trip to do with yoga, that I journaled that whole time, and that kind of journaling I like to do because, you know, when I'm going through something like that, I really want to be able to look back on it and just reflect and kind of use that to my advantage.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's jump forward then to 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe what that year was like for you, sort of where you were?
Yeah, I finished my master's degree, so I lived away for a long time. I moved back to Rochester in 2009,
mm-hmm.
and then I did my master's at RIT. And after I finished that in 2010, I really spent a lot of years, I mean, basically all of, you know, 2010, 11, 12, 13, looking for sort of a permanent home, a permanent job. I was doing a lot of things that really weren't interesting. I was applying to a lot of things that, I wasn't getting. And it was actually right at the very end of 2012 that I applied for a job that I won't say where it was, but I thought I was perfect for it, and I still think that. I still think I was perfect for it, but I didn't get it, and I was really devastated. I think it was sort of a culmination for me of just all the jobs that I wasn't getting or all of the things that I couldn't find. Yeah. And so that was at the end of 2012, and so 2013... Or I'm sorry. Yeah, I think that was actually in 2013. But 2013 just had that feeling. You know, it was just really tough. And I also was going through a lot of health issues. And so trying to figure all that stuff out, you know, on my own. And I was just really low a lot of the time and just didn't feel like I knew what I wanted. And so I was looking for jobs, but I wasn't really super passionate about any of them. And so... Yeah, 2013, as you said at the beginning, was definitely a question. You know, it was just like I just had no idea what to do with myself, basically. And was still, I think, kind of getting acclimated to being back in Rochester, even though I'd been back for a bunch of years. But it takes a while to make new friends here. And, you know, even though I was moving back to my hometown, you know, I was still trying to find my group of people.
Right. So it was a time that I think a lot of people go through, or, you know, in their 30s, sometimes later on, where they're trying to reassess who they really are, mm-hmm. not just who they thought they were mm-hmm. when they were younger. And sometimes during that process, I find in my experiences and a lot of people I've spoken with that things actually get worse for a while.
Yeah.
Like you keep pushing against these doors and nothing's giving, and your health. Something happens usually physically, mm-hmm. and you can be very depressing.
Yeah.
And you can feel that you've been a little bit abandoned. Mm-hmm. And what I like about the idea of a year being a question is that usually those time periods where we're so down, they force us to ask deeper and deeper questions. And it seems like when we start asking the right questions, then we start getting the right answers.
Yeah.
So what was that process like for you throughout the year? What were those questions?
In 2013?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the biggest one was just, what do I want to do with my life?
Yeah.
Because I really was, like I said, applying for jobs, but none of them were like, oh, I'm so excited about this, you know, mm-hmm. besides that one. And I really, you know, even the one that I thought I was perfect for, it still wasn't... I just didn't really know what I wanted.
Right.
And I really felt like I was floundering.
Yeah.
And then dealing with my health and trying to, you know, figure that out and get better with that and start, you know, getting healthy again. That was a major focus.
Yeah. I remember that was maybe we can talk about your trip to Hawaii, which is very, very important for mm-hmm. 2014. But I always think of that time in late 2013 when you started changing your eating habits.
Yeah.
Your eating habits were never bad, but they had to become very, very strict.
Right.
All of a sudden.
So basically the health issue is I have a lot of sort of gut, stomach stuff. And it became sort of unbearable, and I had to really change how I ate. And like you said, I don't think I ate horribly, but at the same time, there was a lot of things that I had to cut out. But I had to figure out how to cut those out, and in the sense that I didn't know what was upsetting my stomach.
Right.
So it took a very long time, probably about 6 months of writing down every single thing I ate to figure out what it was that I needed to cut out. So that was a big part of 2013. And then the other big part was starting to exercise again, which I had sort of abandoned for a bunch of years. So that became a big thing, and I lost about 40 pounds that year. So that was a big thing too.
Yeah, and the reason I brought up the food issue is because I think it's such an important aspect of happiness that should never be glossed over, is what we do with our bodies.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to get in our heads about it. But I think you are a great example of how you were forced into it, I guess, but it became integral,
right?
It seems, at least in what came next.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I'm not thankful for having having lots of stomach issues that still do persist, not as much as they used to, but you know, it's still an issue for me. But at the same time, like you said, you know, I was kind of forced into it. But you know, I'm kind of glad that I was, because it made me have to focus on my health and have to reassess that. And you know, I did. I did then make the choice of, you know, I'm going to write down everything I eat. I'm going to make sure that I can figure some of this out.
Yeah.
And I knew that my weight was a part of it as well. And so that became a priority for me. And I really worked really hard that year. Mm-hmm. And since then too.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know that you were going to yoga classes in 2013.
So actually I wasn't.
Oh, you weren't?
I started yoga about 5 years ago, and I did it for, you know, a couple of years, pretty regularly, like once a week kind of thing. And then I really completely fell away from it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, including, you know, all exercise I completely fell away from.
Okay.
So for 2013, my focus really was more on, like, the cardio stuff because I just needed to lose some of those pounds in order to feel better. And so I have an elliptical machine at my home, and so mostly that's what I did. And I didn't get back into yoga until the very beginning of 2014.
I see.
And in part because I was, I think, you know, most of it actually was because I just was self-conscious about trying that again in such a, what felt like a completely different body than the last time I had been doing it. And so I didn't really feel comfortable going back to it until I had lost a bunch of that weight and felt like, okay, I can try this again.
That's amazing. Yeah. I know we had both complained about how we don't really love yoga classes and
the typical yoga body.
And I realized it's what, and we had complained about it, I think, jointly in 2013, but at that time you weren't even going. Okay.
Right.
And that, so 2014, the year of the answers.
Yeah. The year of Tate, as some people have called it. Yeah. My brother and my trainer, I work with a trainer at a gym, and they both independently were like, this is totally the year of Tate. Like, yeah, you're right.
It was, and it's a very inspiring story for anyone listening who's struggling to find their path, who's struggling with their body issues, who's looking, who's struggling with happiness, not being happy, I would say.
Yeah.
So it started out, so you're working out on your elliptical, you've changed your eating habits, you're starting to, I guess, get more endorphins going, that there's a chain reaction happening, you're feeling better. Mm-hmm. And so you start going back to yoga classes. Yep. And so what was it like when you returned?
Well, part of the reason I started going back was actually, and I got the timeline mixed up a little bit, that job that I felt like I was perfect for was actually closer to the end of 2013. And that was the sort of catalyst of, or I'm sorry, yeah, 2013. Of, you know, I was feeling a lot better. Obviously, I was, you know, doing a lot better, but I, that was a really tough blow for me. And so at the beginning of 2014, I decided that I needed to get away from Rochester, not for, you know, not permanently, but I needed to have some kind of break because I was just getting really, I was getting burnt out on, you know, searching for jobs still. And even though I was feeling so much better, I still didn't really know what I wanted to do as far as work. And so I decided that I needed to go away, and it just sort of hit me. You know, I don't know how I came to this decision, but I just, you know, remember thinking, I need to go on a yoga retreat.
Yeah.
Even though when I thought that, I hadn't done yoga for like 3 years at that point.
It was very surprising.
Yeah.
You said, you're like, I'm going on a yoga retreat.
Yeah, no one really knew what was going on. Yeah, so it was pretty random, but somehow it just came to me. It just made sense that was what needed to happen. And so I started looking around for retreats. I wanted it to be relatively simple as far as, like, I didn't really want to travel to a place where I wouldn't know the language. Not that I haven't done lots of that in my life, and, you know, I like doing that too, but for this it needed to be, I need to just be able to focus on the yoga. I don't want to have to also think about all these other pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
So I started going back to yoga at the beginning of 2014 here in Rochester at Breathe, which is my yoga studio, because I was basically like, if I'm going on a yoga retreat, I should probably do yoga again.
Yes.
So I started going back. And sort of in preparation for this trip, which I then, you know, organized for 2 weeks in Hawaii.
So this is, you had what I'm going to coin as a lit up moment from now on, that moment where you have an overwhelming certainty that you need to do something, and there's no really accounting for why, you just know it.
Yeah.
Looking back at that time, did you know why yoga? Why not meditation?
Well, I guess just because that's something I had done in the past, mm-hmm. and that I remembered how much I had loved it, and I knew that I wanted to get back into it. I was just having a hard time sort of pushing myself to do it. So the first thought of, I need to get away, wasn't like, I didn't want a vacation. It wasn't like, I need to get away for vacation.
Yeah.
Because I had plenty of free time. I was, you know, working part-time jobs, and, you know, it wasn't like I needed that. It was like, if I'm going to go away, I need something that's going to nourish my body, for sure, but also my mind and my soul and my heart.
Yes.
And so that's why, you know, I think that's why it just sort of hit me that, like, that memory of going to yoga years before, that used to do that for me. And so I wanted to do it again.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you tell us a little bit about this this Hawaii trip.
Yeah. It was just really amazing. I really didn't have a whole lot of expectations. I didn't know what to expect from it. I just was excited to go. I've never been to Hawaii before, so that was really exciting. I also didn't really know what to expect out of that. But it is paradise.
Just yes, I've heard.
Flat out paradise. But the place, one of the places that I went to called Kalani, which is a yoga retreat place, I just had the most amazing experience there. The people that I met, a lot of the teachers that were just so wise and so, so heartfelt. And it really felt like, the most welcoming community of people that, they really didn't care where you came from. I know, you know, maybe that sounds bad, but it was wonderful because I think I got the question, you know, what do you do back home? Like maybe once. People wanted to know what I was doing there.
Yeah.
They said, you know, they want to know what brought you to Hawaii. What are you looking for here? Mm-hmm. You know, how has your experience been here? It wasn't about what do you do. And that for me at the time felt so important because I didn't do anything yet. You know, I still was like, I don't know what I do. I don't have a permanent job. I'm still lost. That's why I'm here. And a lot of people who go to Hawaii, that's why they're there. You know, I've heard that story so many times from people either personally or just, you know, people talking about Hawaii and how it sort of is a destination for people that are searching for something.
Yes.
And so with, you know, going there, I don't know, it just gave me even more sort of purpose with the yoga and excitement about the mm-hmm. yoga and not the poses. I mean, of course, that's part of yoga, but the bigger part really is like the quote-unquote yoga off the mat, you know, what you do and how you approach life. And the questions that you ask about yourself and sort of looking in, being in a yoga class, the postures themselves sort of prepare you for asking those questions.
I think that's really brilliant way to frame it. I'd like to continue on because I don't know that everyone out there listening understands about yoga off the mat.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my assumptions about being present and staying present mm-hmm. through discomfort, emotional and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Also being soft on yourself when you need to be. But those are just my immediate impressions. Can you talk more about what it means to you?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about two things in particular that, and you know, I ended up getting a tattoo while I was in Hawaii.
Yes.
With two Hawaiian words. And those two words for me are very indicative of what yoga means for me outside of the postures that you do. One of them is mahalo, which means thank you. I mean, you'll hear that everywhere when you go to Hawaii, people just saying thank you. But it has this deeper meaning of gratitude and of sort of praise and appreciation.
Mm.
And that word, while I was there, just once I learned that it meant more than just thank you, it really spoke to me. Because I think a big part of yoga is that being present and being aware of where you are in the moment and being thankful for that, for whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So not just, you know, I'm thankful that I'm, you know, at Writers and Books being interviewed, you know, which is great, and I am. But more, almost more like being thankful for the things that are really hard to be thankful for.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had this one example when I was in Hawaii where I was in a yoga class and I was finding it really challenging. I was feeling really frustrated. They were holding us in some pose where my leg was like shaking like a leaf, you know, like crazy. And they just were holding us there. And I was like so angry about it, you know, and I was angry at the teacher for holding us there, and I was angry at my leg for like shaking. And all of a sudden I just thought, like, what can I be thankful for in this moment? There's got to be something, right? Maybe that'll make this easier somehow. And so I literally looked down at my leg, and in my head, I mean, if I'd been alone, I would have just said it out loud, but I just said, thank you, leg, for working so hard right now. Because you are, like, you're holding me up, and this is really hard. I get it. Like, it's okay to shake. Sure, that's fine. Like, that makes sense. And so that kind of, like, the hardest moments are the moments you should be thankful for, or not thankful for necessarily, but thankful in.
Oh, that's beautiful, Tate.
Thank you.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So that's the one thing. And then the other piece of it is the other word that I got on my leg and my tattoo is malama, and it means to care for or to take care of. And that was another piece that, for me, I have always struggled with in life and then, of course, in yoga as well, finding ways to push myself and make myself do hard things, but also listen to myself and make sure that I know when too much is too much.
Right.
And so, you know, that's sort of easy to think of in yoga when you're thinking of like, okay, like I have an achy lower back. You know, my lower back is not great. And so there's certain times when, you know, the teacher will say, do so-and-so pose. And I have to make the decision of, am I not wanting to do it because I just am feeling stubborn and I don't want to do it? Or is it really because I shouldn't, because it might hurt me?
Right.
And so that balance of taking care of yourself and making sure that you're pushing yourself and you're still trying hard things.
Right.
That you're not just taking the easy road all the time.
Right.
But that you're also really listening to what you need. So in yoga, you know, as far as just the postures themselves go, but obviously in life, that's true too. Like trying to make yourself do hard things like rappelling down a building, which I did yesterday. And like I said, taking care of yourself and making sure that, you know, you're getting what you need.
I find that to be a very difficult. It's one of those things that's indicative, I think, of maturity, is that lifelong learning of that, where in that calibration you are at any given moment. Am I pushing myself just to push myself beyond what I should be doing? Am I being too easy on myself? Or am I listening, you know, to my body? And it can be everything from like the discipline of writing every day, you know,
or
doing your work at 8:30 in the morning versus 10:30 in the morning. Anything that you want to do, but then some days there's going to be a different flow of energy, and
right.
knowing whether I need to go with that flow or if you need to kind of stand firm.
Right.
And I think it's very internal, you know. It's one of those things that only you can say.
Yep. And that for me, those, both of those things and so many more too, but those are the things that, like I said, with yoga, I feel like the movements, the postures, the poses are what prepares you for doing these other things outside of being in yoga. So trying to practice being aware, being present, being thankful, taking care of yourself while you're moving.
Yes.
And then when you leave, you know, you've just practiced all these great things that you can then bring to the rest of your life.
It's brilliant. And I think one of the things that makes it more challenging is yoga in a group then adds the variable of people and assuming imagining what they're thinking about you, which they're not really, but
yeah, because they're all thinking about themselves.
But wanting to keep up with the instructor, wanting to keep up with the best people in the class.
Yeah.
And then, see, that's where I've had trouble staying present, but even that as a teacher, you know.
Yeah. It's challenging.
Yeah.
And I still find, I mean, I went to a class a couple of weeks ago and I can't remember why, but I was in a lot of pain. I was just like very achy, my whole body.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted to go to the class, but I knew I wouldn't be able to keep up. And so it was a class where the most that I've ever done in the past, I just completely did my own thing. And it was really hard because, you know, I wasn't doing a lot. So it wasn't physically challenging because I was taking a lot of breaks and I was going way slower than everyone else. But mentally it was hard. Really hard, because, yes. You know, it was just making that decision to do that and trying not to think about how everyone else is looking at me and thinking, you know, she's weak or she's whatever they're thinking, which they're so not thinking, right. And just doing it. And so that was actually one of the more challenging classes for me ever, just because I was so outside of what everyone else was doing, and I was doing it because that's what I needed.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's challenging, but that's the ultimate learning curve, right? Yeah. Is learning to be completely yourself, mm-hmm. even among other people. And okay, so you came back from Hawaii, and I remember I saw you the very night you came back, and you were just completely glowing, completely centered. And I knew that you had experienced some profound insights while you were in Hawaii. But the decision to go and become an instructor and go through the long training that it requires, when did that happen?
So that actually, when I came back from Hawaii, I was 100% certain that I would be going back almost immediately. I decided that I wanted to go back, and I wanted to stay for 3 to 4 months at this yoga retreat place that I had been. And so I decided I was going to do that like now-ish, basically, January of 2015. And so I had applied for that, and it sort of fell through, and I was really upset about that. And the day after, I think I found out that that wasn't going to work, I got this email from Breathe Yoga, which is where I go, saying, you know, we still have some spots open for this 200-hour teacher training. And so I sort of started asking around, and I just felt like, you know, I guess that's what I'm supposed to be doing right now. Like, there's a reason why that other thing fell through. Right. And so within a couple of days, I just signed up, and I was one of the last people to sign up because it was only a week before it started. I think I was the last person, actually, because it started a week later, and I just sort of dove right into it and did this 200 hours of teacher training.
Yeah, and that lasted, what was that, 6 months?
That was from September until the end of January.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then pretty much immediately I got a job teaching yoga.
Yes, which is so exciting. So tell us about that. Where are you teach, and how people can come and take classes with you?
Yeah, so I teach in two places. One of them is public and one not. I teach the staff at the Mary Cariola Center once a week, and so that's just for staff, obviously. But I also teach on Sundays, 3 o'clock. At this gym called Max Effort Training, which is on Scottsville Road near RIT.
Right.
And so that's every Sunday from 3 to 4. And the classes are only $8. And we don't have a ton of space, so we do ask that people reserve a space beforehand. But it's been going well. And I really try and tailor it to whoever it is that comes that day. So if there's people that have never, ever done yoga before, if there's people that do it all the time, you know, I really try and make sure that everyone is comfortable. So no matter what the level is, you're welcome to come.
Sounds so wonderful. So once again, this has been Tate DeCaro, a Rochester yoga instructor and philosopher. I feel like I've learned a lot just listening to you talk about yoga. I have a deeper respect and understanding now. And I feel like Tate would be a wonderful person to take classes from. Probably
Thank
very
you.
Compassionate and also very insightful. Is there anything that you would like to say before we go to our listeners?
Well, I'm just really glad I got to share some of this, and I hope that it's useful in some way. You know, some of the lessons that I've learned. You know, I think everyone has to learn their own lessons their own way, but it sometimes can spur you on to learn a lesson that you need to learn, to hear other people talking about their struggles and what they learned from it. So I hope that is useful for other people.
I think so. I didn't know it was useful for me. And I think one of the things I know I take from Tate's, you know, some years are questions and some years are answers, is that the years that are questions are great opportunities.
Yeah.
And that if you keep asking the questions earnestly, you know, and with awareness, you will get the answers.
Yeah. And being sort of, I guess my final thought about that, that quote would be being open enough and listening for the answers.
Listening for the answers.
Yeah. Because you won't hear them if you're just, you know, sort of closed down. But if you're open to hearing the answers, you hear them.
Perfect. I just got goosebumps. You can't see me, but I just... This went, my shoulders went whoop. Well, this has been another episode of Lit Up with Nina Alvarez. My guest has been Tate DeCaro. And Tate, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Until next week.